Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. Another holiday weekend, and everyone, I should say, is probably doing their barbecue thing or traveling, getting to their vacation spot or what have you. And only a few of us, the dedicated, are going to be on the show today, on and since being listeners or part of the audience. And I took that into consideration in terms of today's show. I had a couple things in mind that I thought was time to talk about and decided, well, that may not be anyone to really talk, have this conversation with, so I decided to do something else instead. And so the show today, if you got the promo, we're going to talk about the rising path to privatization. I've used the word rising in that the question of whether or not we are winning or losing this war. And remember, I've said from day one that the war is really, really about the goal of the privatization of everyone and everything. And I've said such things as building the new Reich, Reich in German being empire, and the idea that building this new Reich to last 1,000 years like Rome, and the road to that is privatization, the privatization of everyone and everything. And so in deciding to go at it this way today in terms of this show, I came across something about 2 or 3 days ago. I get about 700 posts a day, and I try my best to get through every day all 700. A lot of them I can just delete because I know right away they don't pertain to what we're interested in. And I came across this one from the Reason Foundation. I've been taking their post for a while now. This is an organization located here in Los Angeles, and their whole thing is they study and track privatization. Not just privatization of education, but the whole ball of wax of privatization. And when I saw it, they gave their annual report. And I said, this is something that I think I need to share with everyone. And I'm either it's already up or it should be up either during the show or shortly after. A link to this found, it's called the Reason Foundation. I know we should all be following this organization, because they do a pretty good job in terms of letting you know how successful they are in their goal of privatizing everything and everyone. And they do supposedly good, quote, objective research, keeping a track of legislation at the federal level, the state level, local level, keeping track of privatization, not only in education, but in other areas that privatization has really taken off in the last 30, 35 years. And I just believe we all should know about this, and we should all follow it in the sense that it's part of the big picture. And if you don't follow it, then you're missing out on something. And so, and trying to figure out how I would deal with it as opposed to just doing a summary of their findings. And when you go to the site, or if we only give you the site address for this particular report, there are several other reports there, annual reports that they came out with last week. But when you go to the site, so you will see the number of areas that they're tracking privatization progress in. And so in trying to decide how to present this so that I didn't just try and read from their report this piece, that piece of it, et cetera, I remember that it wasn't that long ago, back on July 24th, 2016, did a show whereby raised the question, are we winning or losing the war? And that show was prompted by reading some information that came out of the, I think it was the SOS March on Washington that they do every other year or every few years. And Diane Ravitch was one of the speakers there. And she gave this speech in terms of we're winning the war, or we're winning. She didn't say, now that I think about it, she just said, we are winning. And I guess I assume, and maybe others would assume, that she's talking about we are winning the war on public education. We're winning to save it, to preserve it, and stop the corporate state from dismantling public education and turning it over to privatizers and turning public education to private education. That was my assumption. And going over her speech with you, I said she offered several, examples where she felt they represented we're winning. And just to bring you up to date, she talked about the big failures of corporate education to actually implement their reform agenda. And she talks about the collapse of teacher evaluation, the VAM, standardized testing being used as part of a teacher's evaluation. And she talked about the spread of opt-out of state testing. And I guess particularly she was talking about New York, where they continue to set records in terms of the number of families opting out. This past year, I think it was close to or over 300,000. The year before, close to or after 240,000. And people in New York are saying those numbers are on the probably low side, in the sense that they believe that there are more families opt out, but the state is not giving the whole picture. And she talked about massive failures of the state's effort to take over schools, and on and on and on. False promises of urban school improvement schemes, that all these various schemes that have been developed to step in when the state takes over to improve the performance or achievement levels, and how it failed. And she talks about a failed vision of charter schools. Then ed reform has gone fishing, more or less, left the war. She gave the example of Ernie Duncan. He's gone. Michelle Rhee, she's gone. And what was it, a lady in New Jersey, Anderson, she's gone. Cammie Anderson, she's gone. Joe Klein is gone. How all these people who were part of the original thrust of privatizing public education are gone. And so individually and collectively, she was citing these as examples to support the conclusion that we're winning the war, or we're winning. I came back. I questioned that. I challenged it. I offered 14 points to say that when you take one or all of these into consideration, you don't come out with a we're winning the war picture. And I went as far as saying that she and others who are now espousing, we are winning, we're turned the corner, the tide is turning in our favor. I said, no. And to say that was disingenuous. And to say that, it's harmful in that people will start believing it, given the source. The source has such credibility that people will start believing it. And that could lead to those of us who are in the war, on the front lines, or what have you, relaxing, even withdrawing. Those who are on the margin in terms of whether or not to join the war or not, won't join. And those who didn't join and have no plans of joining will feel, well, there's absolutely no need to join because the war is almost over. And so the points that I gave, I thought were more compelling for an argument that we're not winning the war. In fact, we're losing the war. And I'll go over some of the points that I gave as a result of my conclusions. And that was, first, I talked about the fact that states, governors, and mayors are still trying to take over local or state-based public school districts. They're still trying to reduce or the influence or actually eliminate, in some cases, elected school boards by being able to appoint, you know, like in Michigan, the emergency financial managers, in New York, the receiverships that they then take schools over and turn them over to the superintendent as a step towards eventually turning them over to charter schools. Then I talked about austerity. And you know what I mean by austerity, the budget cuts that public education has experienced since the beginning of the 80s and accelerated, of course, in the 2000s and the financial crisis and et cetera. And by that, I'm talking about education budgets, which is almost always the first one to be slashed, were decimated starting. It's at its high point now, but the high point started probably in the 2007-2008 financial crash and the shifting the burden from the state to families, to for college, it's the student and the families, to from pre-K to 12, it's back to the public in terms of having to come up with taxes or cutting programs, you know the drill, band, recess, music, arts, and AP courses, and on and on and on. And the corporate Dems have become a part of this, joining the corporate Republicans. And I looked at what was happening in terms of the political minions. They're still being able to get politicians at the local, regional, or state, national level to carry their privatization water buckets. I looked at the growth of charters, and I talked about Detroit that's becoming almost like New Orleans in the sense of being almost an entire charter district. Well, since that show on the 24th of July, Detroit is taking maybe its final step towards creating an all-charter district. When I was in Detroit back in July, parts of June and July, and went up to the state capitol and attended the last hurdle that the governor had to get by in order to split Detroit district into two districts, the new district and the old district, and the board of three people who had to make that final decision were, of course, all his appointees. So they rubber stamped it right in front of our face, et cetera. And then I talked about New York City and then the fact that in Massachusetts right now there's a war raging in terms of millions of dollars are being spent to try and convince the public to, in a referendum, to vote to increase the number of charter schools or raise the charter school cap. And there are people who are fighting to try and keep it where it is. And I went on and on and on. And each one of my examples, I was citing them as saying, this is clear evidence to me that the war is still raging and that we are losing. Because each time they win in any arena, it's a loss for us. I'm going to repeat that. Each time they win on this broad front that they're waging this war on, be it a small hamlet in rural someplace, be it a small city, north, south, east, or west, be it an entire state, be it something that comes out of Congress, the Senate, the President's office, something that comes out of the court that's a victory for them, it's a loss for us. Very simple. They win, we lose. And so, again, as I was going through all of my examples, it just infuriated me then, it does now. The one thing I want to reiterate from that show, when I got to the point of privatization is still the goal. And when you look at that as if that's the goal, and remember, privatization refers to the ownership and control. Undoubtedly, in my view, they are winning. Then look at what teachers are still being warred upon. In Chicago, just last month, was 500 teachers, 500 positions in education were eliminated, they say, because of budget considerations. Look at the number of teachers that are still being brought up on either charges or being accused of being inadequate, inefficient, whatever, and being placed in teacher jail in New York. I'm sorry, rubber room in New York, teacher jail here in California, and equivalent up and down the state across the country. These things, and are still there. They have not disappeared. And I said each one of them in their own right represent a win and another step closer towards the dismantling of public education. Okay. With that in mind, when I saw this report, and I said, I got to deal with this. I don't normally go through reports. I don't care where they come from and what have you. But this one, I made an exception to my own rule here. It's called the Annual Privatization Report 2016. We're dealing with the subsection Education. Annual Privatization Report 2016 Education. The total report has, I can't remember now how many different subsections, but there are a number of them. And again, we're going to put up, if we haven't already done so, we're going to put up the link so that you can go and see the original yourself, and you can decide whether or not you want to go and look at the other sections that they talk about privatization efforts, in addition to the one that specifically deals with what we're interested in, and that is education. The report is broken down into 9 sections. And the sections cover an introduction, and B is federal private school choice highlights, C, state private school choice highlights, then private school choice legal developments, charter schools expanding market share, state charter schools legislative highlights, federal charter school legislative highlights, and then something called weighted student funding and how it's expanding in the States. Now, when you read this, I'm going to give some highlights, but if you read this, it would be nice if you could just tell me whether or not you think we're winning. I'm hesitating because I want that to sink in. When you read these highlights and the numbers that they use to support their conclusions and or draw their conclusions from, tell me if we're winning. And before I go into some of the little details that I plan to go into, there's some things I want you to think about. And, for example, one, it would be really, really nice if we had an organization or organizations who provided an annual report like the one that I'm referencing here and want you to go to. There may be an organization out there doing it. I'm just not aware of it. So if you know of it, please let me know. But it would be very, very nice if we had a reliable, professional organization or group of individuals that pull this type of information together, highlighting for us where we are winning, where we are not winning or losing, so that we could see it big picture-wise as well as on the small picture-wise. We, to my knowledge, we don't have that. Again, I don't know everything. I think I do, but no, I know I don't. But anyway, I'm not aware of it, so make me aware. That's one thing. Two, the Reason Foundation itself, bookmark this and get on their list so they can send you stuff. Now, we're teachers, parents, advocates, activists. This is only one theater of war. The big picture globally, big picture nationally, the war is raging. And they do a pretty good job of highlighting the war and how and where it's being fought in this country on many different fronts. And you need to know that. You just can't get by knowing only what's happening in education. And there are so many of us, the super vast majority, don't even know what's happening in education, to tell you the truth, especially on a national level. Hell, don't even talk about the global level. And some of them not even in terms of the whole state. It's only what's happening in their classroom, their school, their district. And they may know something about what's happening in other districts as it relates to pay differential. They'll know about that. And that's not good enough. Just flat out, that's not good enough. So, I want you to at least hear me and consider it. And why we need a good, honest assessment report at the national, state, city level, I just stated it. Awareness. Remember the paradigm. Awareness, understanding, helps lead to emotional engagement. The three of them primed you as an individual or collectively to engage in hopefully positive social movement, social action. That's what we need. And the point that I made already, and I'll keep making it, their wins are our losses. You know, if we total up our wins and losses, where do you think we'll stand? And we could do it right this moment. Where do you think we'll stand? Do you think we're winning? Do you think we're even holding our own? Do you think we brought this war to a standstill? Or do you think we have possibly turned the tables even so slightly towards winning? Or maybe in more military terms, have we fought them to a standstill in terms of their progress towards their overall objectives? And we're now capable of mounting an offensive? You won't really know that unless we have, and here's their word, the data, honest, reliable, professional data telling us where we are without, you know, fudging the numbers and et cetera. Now, the point, this is and has always been and always will be a privatization war. You can call it a corporate war. You can call it with neoliberalism like I always do. But the bottom line, this is a war to privatize everyone and everything. And education is a primary objective of theirs, is to privatize education. And I can go ahead and cite some right now, right this moment, instance where the war is raging to illustrate that the war is there. For example, as we talk, look at what's happening in the state of Washington. When the Supreme Court there said that the charter schools that were recently passed, after three attempts to get it passed, they finally got the law changed to bring in charter schools. And then the states start trying to fund them. Some organizations took the court, and the Supreme Court ruled that the charter schools were unconstitutional. They were not, was a common school or public schools, and hence they couldn't be funded. Well, the Supreme Court justice who wrote that decision, a woman, she is up for, I guess, re-election to that position, and there are millions of dollars being poured into a campaign to unseat her as a payback for authoring the collective decision of other judges on the court that charter schools in that state were unconstitutional. Look at what's happening in Massachusetts right now. Again, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, are poured in to defeat an initiative to not raise the cap on charter schools. Maybe I should say it the other way. There's an initiative that seeks to raise the cap on charter schools. Public has said no, and now big money has funded this campaign to get the public to change its mind and to vote to raise the cap. They didn't even have charter schools, I think, until the Obama administration said that if you want to compete for some of this race to the top money, if you have charter school legislation, if you have caps on those number of charter schools, you have to raise them. If you don't have charter school legislation, you have to enact it. If you have it and they're weak, you have to make them stronger. A continuation here. Look at Chicago. Was it just a few weeks ago? The city schools authority laid off 5,000, I think, and see big numbers all the time. 500 teachers and other ed workers. Look at Detroit, as I just said. They just got the go-ahead to split Detroit School District, DPS, into two districts, a new district that will start debt-free and get probably most of the best buildings in terms of conditions and et cetera into this new school district. The old school district will get all of the hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of debt that the state itself helped accumulate when the state took over. And eventually, that old district will die. And that new district is going to be a all-charter, or damn near all-charter schools. And let me give you a comparison here of what I'm trying to convey. The war itself, and I've said this several times before, remember the war itself started in the urban centers across the country. And I've said that the reason it started there was that was a population that occupy our urban centers that are the most vulnerable in terms of attack. Racial minorities, the poor, people who don't have a history of voting, especially on off-year elections, people who, a lot of them can't vote because of records, prison records, people can't vote because they're immigrants, on and on and on. And the resistance would be marginal. And I also said that there would come a time when they would move from the beachheads that they've established in the urban centers, and they'd move out to the suburbs. They're doing that now. And I'll go back to Detroit. There's a movement there in Detroit to expand the war to the suburbs. But I'm thinking more about right now. This current war in the urban centers with high-stake testing and with the charter schools and charter schools not taking everyone that apply, charter schools taking kids, and then after the whatever the state deadline is for counting the number of students that you have so that your budget allocation would be based upon that number, and then those many schools get rid of kids after that date, and then those kids who are put out because they don't test well, kids who put out because, quote, they are behavioral problems, kids who are put out for the various reasons and sent back to the public schools. I'm going to suggest what I've said in maybe different ways before, that if we don't win this war, those kids that they're putting out of the charter schools now, they will want them back. I know your jaw just dropped. They will want them back. And I'll tell you why they'll want them back. Because when they win this war, one, I've said that if we're spending anywhere from $1.2 to $1.5 trillion a year from pre-K to PhD, once they win, and by that I mean across the board, they'll have the federal government totally under control. They have the state, the counties, the cities. They'll raise the budget. It'll go from 1.5 to 1.7 to 1.9 to $2 trillion and on and on and on. They will want those kids back that they put out because they want that money. Two, I'll bet you they will not do the Common Core. They won't do the high-stake testing. They won't be accountable so that they will say X number percentage of our students are failing. It won't matter because those students that they put out, those student quotes that were failing, worth more to them under this win-win scheme than they do now. And I'll give you an example. I hope you're familiar with the contest that's going on now about the privatization of prisons that started under Clinton I's administration. These private prison companies, some of them who are listed on Wall Street, when they get a privatization contract from the city, from the county, from the state, almost across the board, they have a clause in their contract that states the city, whoever is providing, they're providing the service for, you must maintain a 95% occupancy daily rate. In other words, you must bring people in, and we must be able to keep these people in our facilities. And if not, you pay us for every person that's under the 95% cap daily. Apply that to charter schools. If our public school system become a charter school nation, then every kid still has to have an education. They're going to want those kids back. If there's no accountability, and you have this warm body, and you can say, on this date, we had X thousands of warm bodies, it's to your best interest to keep them. You may not be following me on this, but I bet you what I just said would happen. And that would be proof positive that we've lost the war. It's not an aside. It's really something that I want you to, again, think outside of the education arena and look at what's happening in other facets of our country and around the world in terms of privatization. And you can just, I think you can see where privatization is heading. And something else. I mentioned either last week or week before last that Michigan was the first state to have the governor having the authority to take over, quote, trouble financially in crisis school districts. And now, last count is there are 26 states that have that provision. That number is growing, folks. I don't know of a single state where a governor who had that authority has lost it. Not a single state. But I can tell you, states that are considering giving their governor that authority. So, again, this report just reminded me of so many areas in which if we had knowledge, data, we could be able to better assess where we are in this war in terms of winning, losing, or holding our own. Austerity. I think every single state and probably territory that makes up this United States have austerity measures and have had austerity measures in place for at least the 5, if not the last 10 years or more. And that number is growing as opposed to declining. Tell me we're winning. We're not. We're not doing it. Okay. Look at other areas. Look at what's happening at or to our colleges of education or schools of education who have been charged with the responsibility of preparing professional teachers. They're one of the new kids on the block in terms of being attacked state by state by state, and that number is growing. Look at teacher firing. As I mentioned earlier, Chicago, other states, other cities, are still firing teachers, reducing the teacher force. Look at the number of teachers who are quitting because they just can't take it anymore. Look at teachers who are having health issues and they are on leave, or they don't come back, or they retire early. To me, these are the indicators that we need to be looking at. Look at school closures, takeovers, turnaround, receiverships, whatever you want to call it. Look at the school-to-prison pipeline. We look at the high-stakes testing. Yeah, opt-out is had some success, but it's marginal in terms of the big picture. Look at the school board takeovers. And look at the recently passed ESEA, or Student Achieve, legislation. I think it was signed into law in December. Man, that's a boondoggle for charters. It's a boondoggle for the privatization of education. Why am I saying all of this? Because these are the areas that the war is being waged. We don't have, when I say we, I'm always, when I say we, I'm always talking about the resistance, those of us who are trying to save public education and keep it public. We don't have the data to know how we're doing. The other side, they do. To my knowledge, as I said at the top of the show, we don't have the annual reports that are critical to our awareness, understanding, emotional engagement, and you know the rest. We don't have universities that I know of, and I just remembered there is one university, and I'm thinking it's in New York, that does try and monitor privatization. I can see it, but I can't see it clearly. And Stanford does something also, but Stanford thing is not for us per se. So anyway, and looking at this report, you'll see what I'm talking about. And I'm now going to go and give you a little bit of the report. Said if we did our thing, that we were able to get the link up, you'll see for yourself in the details. But I love this first sentence on the introductory section. It said, in the past year, the United States continued strong progress towards more educational freedom. Legislative victories in 2015-2016 heralded 6 additional new school choice programs, raising the total number of 59 programs across the United States and the District of Columbia. These programs are characterized by vouchers, and then they tell you what a voucher is, tax credit, and they tell you what that is, and they then say that educational savings accounts, that and what that is, and they say that such progress towards school choice reflects a growing approach in public education towards school funding that reflects the needs of individual students and follow them to the schools of their choice. Wow. Think about it now. If you're on the other side and you just read that first paragraph, you would be jubilant, because they've just said that this past year, 2015, and this report came out in August, so just a few days ago, and the numbers reflect up sometime into 2016. They're saying that we're winning. Diane, you hear me? We're winning. So that's just the first paragraph. It cracks me up. And then he goes on to say, more children are taking part in school choice programs as well. Over 390,000 students receive a voucher, tax credit scholarship, educational savings account to enroll in the schools of their choice in 2015. In other words, they added, well, the next sentence will tell you, this is up more than 75,000 from the previous year. At the same time, an estimated 30,000 more parents and families receive tax relief through individual tax credit or educational expense-related deductions for an estimated total of $911,500 in 2015. Now, you see what this report, this is just, well, let me just read this final sentence in the introduction. Americans continue to support choice, increasing numbers, laying the foundation for future reforms. A January 2016 national poll conducted by American Federation for Children found 70% of Americans support school choice, including over three-quarters of the millennials and Hispanic voters. Additionally, over 64% said that they were more likely to vote for a candidate who favored expanding school choice. Less than a quarter of Americans now oppose school choice, down from 27% last year. End of argument. We're winning. And what's to follow is just details of the magnitude of us winning. When I read this thing, I kept saying, well, I said a couple things. One, I don't know the quality of this, I think it's a nonprofit organization, as a objective, responsible, professional, academic, or what have you, professional in terms of their research, the design of their research, the reliability of their findings, and on and on and on. But if these numbers can be verified, if what they're saying can be verified, doesn't bode well for us. The next section, B, federal private school choice highlights, where they mention the Student Success Act, a massive federal education bill that reauthorized elementary and secondary education act, replacing long expired No Child Left Behind, and what have you. He said even though the bill didn't do all the things that they wanted, but it did do some good thing for us, and so that it gave the states, what I had argued against previously, it gave the states more latitude in developing choice programs, developing new expanded paths to privatization, and highlighting what the feds have done. Then they mentioned Title I funds here and how more, I guess, Title I funds would be available for charter schools or choice schools to be able to get that additional money. Then next section is state private school choice highlights. Then they go through like Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, chronologically, or alphabetically, I should say, District of Columbia, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Montana, Nevada, North Carolina, and Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Wisconsin, and you get the picture. When you go through the states, they tell you what the state, in the form of the legislature, the governor, has done to enhance the choice movement, to enhance the privatization of education. A little bit here, a little bit there in a given state, but when you add it up across the country, significant impact. The next section is on private school choice legal development, where they talk about court decisions that either most likely support, strengthen a state's choice funding options. And again, the same ones, the Arizona, the Alabama, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, Nevada. You've seen the same people, New Hampshire in this particular case, Oklahoma again, Wisconsin. Then the next section is charter schools expanding market share. This is the one that we need to take a strong, strong look at. And there's a table here that tells you top 10 public charter school students by school district. Very quickly, because I've been told, gotta end our shows at 2:55 West Coast time, because the show that comes on after us, they want the 5 minutes from 2:55 to 3 o'clock to make sure that all their preparations with the technicians and et cetera are all in place so that they can start exactly at 3 o'clock and have their full 55 minutes. And so, anyway, I got to adhere to that. But anyway, you'll find that New Orleans, 93% enrollment share of students there in charter schools. Detroit or Michigan has two and three. Detroit, 53%. Flint, Michigan, 47%. And all the way down at the bottom, you have schools in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio, Cleveland, and in San Antonio having 30%. And they talk very glowingly about the fact that they have increased their numbers significantly. Even though I think the total number is 6% of the nation, that's a hell of a lot more than they had when they first started. And so, anyway, go check this out, please. You owe it to yourself to do it. I wish I had my 2 hours back and we could then go into some discussion of this, or I could have gone into more detail. But with that, I have got to say goodbye, because I promised that I would adhere to the time limit faithfully. But there's one thing I want you guys to look at in that report: weighted student formula. I just ran into this, and that's a new weapon, super weapon, on steroid weapon. And I wish somebody would come and tell me about this so that I would be more intelligent on it. But with that, let me say goodbye, everyone. Have a good Sunday and a good holiday. See you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time: education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.